From the Opubco studios at Britain and Broadway, you're listening to a News OK podcast.
Hi, this is Gene Triplett, entertainment editor for The Oklahoman and NewsOK.com. I'm here today with entertainment writer George Lang. George?
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. We're here to talk about movies opening in the Oklahoma City area on Friday, November the 13th. And we're going to kick it off with The End of the World. Tell us about 2012, George.
Oh, my gosh. I give everything a fair shake, but let's face it. Roland Emmerich has done everything he possibly can to destroy the world in his career. You know, we had aliens decimating the White House and everything else in their path in Independence Day. And you had you had a big lizard, you know, that was supposed to be Godzilla but just looked like a big Tyrannosaurus Rex. Mm-hmm. Stomping all over Manhattan and Godzilla, and then just a few years ago, you know, we entered a new ice age in The Day After Tomorrow. We'll see. Basically, in 2012, yeah, he takes care of it all.
Yeah,
I mean, we've got everything. We've got giant tidal waves knocking over, luxury liners just like the Poseidon Adventure. We've got big cracks developing in West LA just like an earthquake. We've got, I mean, buildings on fire just like the Towering Inferno. It's like, you know, Roland Emmerich is the current generation's Irwin Allen. So what happens here is that, you know, is we find out in a prelude that the Earth's crust is heating up, and so that's going to lead to inevitably the end of the world. And so, this geophysicist named Adrian Helmsley, who's played by a great actor, really slumming, Chiwetel Ejiofor, he lets the president's chief of staff know about all this, and so the government has a plan underway, but hardly anybody knows about it except the powerful and rich. A failed novelist who's been kind of slumming, working as a limousine driver named Jackson Curtis, who's played by John Cusack, finds out about all this by listening to this Art Bell-style radio crackpot played by Woody Harrelson, and so he goes to get his family and rescue them, but he's just on the edge of the all of this calamity. And I mean, John Cusack is the best limousine driver in the world. This is the guy you need when you've got a flight waiting for you at LAX. He's going to get you there, because I've never seen anybody outrun cracks in the earth. Well, who's seen that? I mean, but I've never seen anybody drive like he does when he's out racing these huge fissures in these West LA boulevards, and so he's able to outrun it, and then they get to an airfield.
Wait a minute, what happened to all the LA traffic?
I know. I mean, we've been to LA a lot.
Yeah,
we spend a lot of time in LA traffic, and this guy is just plowing through. There's nothing holding him back. He's just gunning down Santa Monica Boulevard and completely unimpeded. And so, beyond that, he gets to an airfield, and of course, you know, he's got his family, his estranged family. His wife is played by Amanda Peet, and she's remarried to a Beverly Hills plastic surgeon, which is, you know, your cue to know that the guy's probably not going to make it, you know, because we're not supposed to like people like that. Anyway, but Gordon Silberman, who's played by a great, you know, actor and indie film director Tom McCarthy, he's apparently flown a plane once. Oh, you should see this guy fly a plane. He can, he flies between buildings that are crashing into the ground. He dodges trains that are falling off of cliffs. He's an amazing, the Blue Angels would love to have this guy. It is amazing what happens. I mean, basically, Roland Emmerich takes everything that he possibly can in the world that's identifiable, and he destroys it. And then on top of that, he puts, you know, he puts unlikely heroes, which isn't a bad thing in a story, because we all need unlikely heroes. But he has these unlikely heroes do incredibly unlikely things, like as a Russian cargo plane is landing on a glacier, they open the cargo hatch, and our hero drives a Bentley out the back onto the glacier and parks it. You know, this guy, you know, why was he trying to be a novelist? He can do absolutely anything. So basically what we have here are just a series of gags and side gags. And this is really what I find kind of offensive about 2012, is that it kind of, you know, it hits us over the head with all of these things being destroyed. We see, we see the USS John F. Kennedy, the aircraft carrier, crash into the White House. We see all of these, all of these recognizable buildings catching fire, and eventually, you don't care anymore. Mm-hmm. You're watching the world end, and it's just another gag. And frankly, the end of the world gets kind of boring and stupid very quickly. I tell you, it's going to make a ton of money, but I prefer to see the end of the world be treated with some sort of gravitas, some emotion. Mm-hmm. I think we saw a pretty good end of the world movie, a pretty great end of the world movie last week, The Road, and we'll be talking about that in about 2 weeks. But this is if you take, as I wrote in my review, you've got the T.S. Eliot poem, The Hollow Men. This is the way the world ends, not with a bang but a whimper. Mm-hmm. In The Road, you have humanity is sort of at low ebb, whimpering but still alive.
Right.
And in this, it's just a series of big dumb bangs. And it's going to make a ton of money, and I wish I could stop it.
Yeah,
but
well,
there's just nothing that can be done about the end, about this particular end of the world. I gave it 1 star. It's one of my least favorite movies of the year.
Yeah.
There you go. Well,
did it deserve even 1 star? Gosh. Wow.
It had some good actors in it.
Yeah, that's
if it were populated by complete incompetence, that'd be one thing. But you've got John Cusack, one of our favorite actors. Amanda Peet's nothing to sneeze at. Chiwetel Ejiofor, Oliver Platt, Danny Glover, Thandie Newton, Woody Harrelson, who was so fantastic in Zombieland. But all of these people are just wasted. It's a shame.
Well, paycheck, I guess.
Paycheck.
Yeah.
Cha-ching.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, we go from the end of the world to a time in history when the British government tried to put an end to rock and roll, at least on the radio.
See, that sounds a lot more calamitous to me.
Yeah, me too. Well, imagine the best elements of Robert Altman's MASH and National Lampoon's Animal House set adrift on an old tanker in the middle of the North Sea with a super library of 60s rock and roll, and you've got a pretty good idea of the high level of irreverent mirth and great music that floats pirate radio.
Wow.
Yeah. Writer-director Richard Curtis, who gave us Love Actually, has launched one of the funniest ensemble comedies of the year, I think. It's inspired by these two hilarious classics I just mentioned and the actual events of his youth, when in the home country of world-changing musical acts such as the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, and the Who, the government-run British Broadcasting Company, or the BBC, aired little more than 2 hours of rock or pop music each week. But the British establishment's anti-rock conservatism only served to create a movement of underground rock and roll freedom fighters, broadcasting illegally from ships and marine structures anchored outside the UK's territorial waters, reaching millions of English hearts and souls that were hungry to hear Roger Daltrey stuttering My Generation and the Yardbirds pleading For Your Love. Curtis sets his fictionalized account of this time on a fictional 1966 aboard a fictional vessel, where urbane and unflappable station owner and ship's captain Quentin, played by Bill Nighy, who is a Curtis regular, oversees a colorful crew of rogue disc jockeys that includes a rule-bending renegade American known only as the Count, played by Philip Seymour Hoffman in naturally cool dude mode, ultra-hip, flamboyantly mod-clad radio royalty Gavin Cavanaugh, played by a perfectly smooth and slinky Reese Ifans, amorous but overweight Dave, who's played by an achingly funny Nick Frost.
Nick Frost.
Yeah, from Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, his character is amazingly successful at seducing the station's prettiest female fans, despite his girth and to the consternation of his shipmates. And then there's oddball New Zealander Angus, played by Reese Darby, and slow-witted thick Kevin, played by Tom Brooke, and Quentin's visiting teenage stepson, Tom Sturridge, who's ripe for being corrupted by this rowdy band of airwaves outlaws. Meanwhile, back in London, a relentlessly stuffy and intolerant government minister, played in excellent straight-faced comic style by Kenneth Branagh, is leading the charge to pull the plug on pirate radio and sink it once and for all, and the crew of the rocking boat has to figure out a way to pull it together and keep their 24/7 party afloat and the music alive. With both boatloads of adoring women, including Bond girl Gemma Atherton and January Jones of Mad Men, visiting the platter-spinning pirates twice a week, and round-the-clock revelry recalling the debauchery of Delta House, Curtis's film is as chaotic and anarchic as the 60s themselves. Fueled by a sizzling soundtrack studded with some of the greatest songs by the Kinks, the Stones, the Easy Beats, the Small Faces, and the Who, Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, and about 50 others. It's one of the most incredible soundtracks I've ever heard. It's obviously a labor of love, Curtis's funny Valentine to the 60s era's free-spirited champions of free will and rock and roll, and it's as full of heart as it is hilarity, and a fitting tribute to the unifying power of the music, and I highly recommend it.
Excellent. You know, I mean, one of the great tragedies of the late 60s is that almost all the great, but a lot of the great music that was coming out at that time just wasn't getting played on the radio. There was on BBC,
right?
And maybe you'd see people on Top of the Pops, but you had to wade through a bunch of garbage to get to the nuggets of greatness. So yeah, this is something that I think a lot of people are going to identify with, and it sounds like there's just amazing music too.
Yeah. So. Well, I awarded this one 3.5 stars, and I think you've seen another movie this week where you gave the same score.
Well, you know, and this happens. This actually takes place around the same time in Britain. It's called The Damned United, and this is about somebody who most people in the U.S. have no idea who he is. There was a guy named Brian Clough who was sort of an infamous football manager, a soccer manager there in Britain. He took a struggling team in Derby County and turned them into these heavyweights. Took them from Division II to Division I, and just really whipped them into shape. And at the same time, really caught the attention of the media there in the country with his sort of outsized ego and his penchant for exactly saying what he felt. He was such a loudmouth and such a braggart that Muhammad Ali actually appeared on British television to sort of jokingly, tell him off and say, to paraphrase him, that this is my business. You need to call this off, okay? You know, so yeah, Brian Clough was quite a character. But anyway, in The Damned United, which was written by Peter Morgan, who wrote Frost Nixon and the Queen, he's played by Michael Sheen, who appeared in both of those films and has become sort of the master at playing real life recent Brits from recent history, I kind of cheated a little bit and I went online to check out some footage of Clough in action, and Sheen is absolutely dead on, just like he was in those other films. He is just superb in this, and so this follows him from 1967 when he and his assistant Peter Taylor, who's played by Timothy Spall, begin their tenure with Darby County and take them from the absolute bottom to the top, bring them into Division I and make them champions. Well, see, this isn't some kind of Hoosier story. The truth about this is that the Damned United is not about this man's victory. It's about his complete cratering, his total the disaster that he is known best for. In 1974, Clough took over Leeds United, and Leeds United had been riding high in British football rankings since the early 60s under the leadership of Don Revie, who's played here by Colm Meaney. And I did some cheating. I checked out some footage of Don Revie. Colm Meaney, who's a great character actor, really just knocks it out. He looks like him and he talks like him. It's stunning. Revie was a cocky man, not really known for playing it straight with his team. Leeds United kind of played dirty, but because of his winning streak, he was just revered throughout the country. Well, so naturally. Clough took over the job, and he had it for exactly 44 days. Mm. Okay, he was the new Coke of British football. he lasted for 44 days and had and wound up with an abysmal 1-5 record, and he was bounced quickly. And it is such a notorious period in British football history that it really makes for a compelling story. This guy with this unstoppable ego, gets swatted down just furiously by his sheer mania. He took over Leeds United thinking that he could just he could throw out everything that Don Revie did. Mm-hmm. that all of the systems that he had in place, and he could go in and tell these star football players that they're not to act the way they have been, that he's watching them, and that that everything that they've done, as far as he's concerned, everything that they've done before is worthless and start over. And so everybody in the club hates Clough by this time, and he just ends up failing miserably. It does show that he does manage to come back a bit, and for the rest of his life, Brian Clough still he managed to resurrect his reputation with Nottingham Forest, and was able to turn that club around. But really, the joy in here is seeing some amazing actors, especially Sheen, take on this history. And you don't have to know that much about soccer. You don't have to know anything about soccer to appreciate this. It's just good storytelling. It's good acting, and I gave it 3.5 as well. Basically, we're sending people to the British cinema this weekend, aren't we?
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah. Is this one playing limited screens?
That's right. Yeah. It's playing the AMC Select there at AMC Quail Springs. Okay. So catch it quickly. You know how these things go. It could be gone in a week, but this is absolutely worth seeing.
All right. So there's a couple of pretty decent attractions hitting the screens this weekend. So that about does it for this week.
That's right. Avoid the disaster.
There you go. Forget the end of the world.
Go to Britain. Avoid the disaster.
Yeah. All right, George. Well, for George Lang, I'm Gene Triplett. Thanks for listening in. We'll talk to you again soon.